Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
And welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom, and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame. The highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn, but are so grateful that we did. So, sex, relationships, monogamy, non-monogamy. So many of us have been brought up to believe that there is only one way to do a partnership. And this, of course, is so far from the truth, but still so many of us feel a lot of shame surrounding our choices and our preferences. And I would go so far as to say, not particularly radical, but especially women. But my guest today is openly discussing her past, her present, and her future, and how it all looks in terms of relationships. And it is so refreshing to hear. So listen to us discuss all this and more.
Hey, so it is pre-COVID. We're not quite sure what year it is. But we all know that there is a before and there is an after when it comes to COVID. So we are currently in the before time, and we are in a cabin in the woods in Minnesota, which sounds like the start of a horror film, but it's not.
And the moment was scary, but yeah. Yes, horrifying in other ways.
Horrifying without any kind of bloodshed, I hope. But we are in the cabin in Minnesota, pre-COVID. And in this moment, Chloe, why do you think you've got no friends?
So in this moment, I was on a cabin trip with a boyfriend and a group of friends. Mm-hmm. And I have a history of chafing against the bounds of monogamy, and I'm currently doing a solo show at the Edinburgh Fringe about that. This boyfriend and I had been dating for a few months, and we went on this trip, and there was a guy on the trip who I had never met before, and he and I were flirting the whole trip and mm-hmm. like pretty openly in front of my boyfriend. And I was sort of aware of like, this is bad, but I also was like kind of letting it slide because, hey, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one night on this trip, everybody else had gone to sleep, and it was just me and the guy who I had never met before, the new guy in the kitchen. And we were very flirty, and we were like very close to kissing. I held back. I was like, I know that this is wrong. I already had cheated in past relationships, not in this one. Yeah. And so I held back, and that holding back is so like exciting and dramatic. And it's like, no, we can't, you know, it's thrilling.
It is. No, it's and true. Then,
and then, I think we had like a long hug, good night. And then I went into the bedroom where my boyfriend was already in bed and, crawled in, and we like chatted and hung out. And that was the first night that my boyfriend said, I love you. Yeah. And that is, I would say, probably fairly reflective of what I have.
I am obsessed with this.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, carry on. What happened next?
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the trip, I just, you know, I think in the moment that he said that, I knew that I had been like annoyed that he wasn't saying, I love you.
Right.
Earlier I had felt it. But also like, I think I have that kind of like new relationship, early relationship, honeymoon stuff. I mean, it's such a drug. And so the way, and when you're doing a drug, you have to keep doing more and more and more of the drug to keep feeling higher and higher and higher. Yeah. And so of course, like making a relationship more intense is part of doing that drug. Yeah. And so like, there's in many ways I look back on that relationship and I'm like, we shouldn't have dated for more than a month. It's crazy that we dated for as long as we did.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful person, but like, we weren't matched well together.
Yeah.
Like, why was I mad that we weren't saying, I love you? But then he said, I love you on this night that I already felt romantic tension with somebody else. And at that point, it's like, this just was a relationship that I shouldn't have been in. And the question for me perpetually about my like chafing at the bounds of monogamy, and this is part of what's in the show, is I truly don't know whether the answer is like, I have just been, whether it's like, I'm fundamentally a non-monogamous person. I don't think it's actually that. I think I'll like always want to flirt with somebody, but like, I'm not trying to be poly. I'm not trying to be, you know, I love being a girlfriend. And so then the other alternative is like, is it just that I like haven't met somebody who I match with enough to keep, like, to really not make me feel like flirting with a new guy at the cabin weekend? Or is it somewhere in the middle, which I think it's probably somewhere in the middle, because it's never actually black and white. It's never actually just A or just B. It's always some mix of all of the above.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah,
that night I was, of course I said it back, of course, because I had been like wanting for us to say, I love you for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I spent the next 2 years debating whether or not to break up with that person.
Sorry, because I would do the exact same thing. I would do the exact same thing, even though like that moment and that everything would speak so much about what was going on.
Oh, it's so obvious. It's so apparent that from the outside, it's like, hey, buddy, don't get out of there. Come on.
That's amazing.
Yeah. There's a million moments in my life where if I could just be my own voice, I would be like, hey, pal, you don't want to be here.
Man, come on now. Stop it.
Wrap it up. Yeah.
You know this. You know this. It's always that thing when, like, I have it quite a lot where I look at myself and I look at situations in the past. I'm gone like, oh my God, I knew it. I should have listened to that voice. I should have listened to this. I should have got out of there. I should have trusted my instincts. And then so much of the time now, I like hear that voice and I go, no, it doesn't know. It doesn't know what it's.
Oh, yeah. Nah. Current me is so, I mean, like, the me that's making whatever decision I'm making is like, no, but you don't understand the nuance of the situation. And the back of my brain is like, hey, asshole. Yeah. Not only do I understand the nuance of this situation, I've watched you in this exact situation 25 other times throughout your life, you moron. Anyway. I really think I'm smarter than my own brain, and I'm not smarter than my own brain.
But isn't that amazing? It's so good. I think I know so much better than my instinct. Because I like so much of the time, like, I've made terrible decisions. Terrible decision. I go like, yeah, but that's because I was following my gut. So my gut and my instinct are like, they're pretty shady. But it's like, I know full fucking well. whole fucking world, yes, that I was going straight with something else. And my instinct, my gut would be like, you dickhead, you know where this is going. Yep. And then I'm like, no, no, no.
I have stayed in relationships way longer than I should have many times, because the thing that I would say was, my head is ready to be done with the relationship, but my heart isn't. And I have now developed I've developed the litmus test of, the second that I say that, the second that I'm like, my head's ready, but my heart isn't, that means go, leave him, get out of the relationship. Fucking, that's the sign.
That's incredible.
The second, I don't always follow it. I've had the instinct and then been like, yeah, but it's nice for somebody to kiss me and have a wedding date, you know?
Yeah. Cause that's always great. Yeah. Like, the idea of that is fantastic. And I think about it like all the time, but then I also go, oh, but then like, nobody else will ever go down on me.
Yeah. But what am I going to be? Am I going to be alone? I can't be alone. You're not going to let me be alone.
I had it. Go on.
Can I tell you my other litmus test?
Yes.
My other litmus test is, the second that I feel that it would be more convenient if they broke up with me, because I know that I'll be okay, but I'm not sure that they're going to be okay if I break up with them. The second that I'm like, God, it would really be nice if they just ended it. Yeah. That's when I'm like, go.
Yeah. But I find it like completely impossible. I talk about my ex because I know full well he does not listen to this. But like, I was with someone, and for the last, I'd say like 20 months of the relationship, it was so clear that like it was wrong. It was wrong. And I was like convincing myself in different ways, like using different things, like just getting like smashed or, you know, just like being like, oh yeah. But like, that's okay. Cause actually I really like it when he does that or whatever. It was, and for so long, it was so wrong. But I just couldn't get out, because the idea of just being alone and being not in this thing that I'd created was just, it was so horrific, the idea of it, that I just couldn't stay.
It's so, we can justify anything. When you're smart enough, you can absolutely convince yourself, if you can see evidence wherever you want to. Yeah.
Mm. Did anything actually happen with this guy, or was it just that one?
Nothing. Moment? Nothing happened with that guy.
Right.
I did cheat in that relationship. Yes, I did cheat in that relationship, but nothing happened with that man.
Yeah. But you know what? Like those, like you were saying, those moments of going like, it's very close, you're alone with someone, and like you nearly kissed but didn't kiss. That is so charged.
It's the best drug in the world.
Yeah. It's so erotic. It's so unbelievably like powerful and erotic that is almost better than like doing whatever you did in the kitchen. Like actually just going full hog. It's so, and then it like sticks out as this like thing. It's so
great. Moment with this guy who was like not that interesting, but when you have chemistry with somebody, it's intoxicating.
Yeah, completely. And it is like, and like you said, it is like a drug. It is a complete drug. That feeling of, I don't know, how would we describe it? Sexual tension?
To me, it's like, you know that something's about to happen.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be quoting my show on this podcast.
Please do.
You know that something's about to happen, but for a second, you're still officially clean. That like, you can, it's like you're in zero gravity. It's such a high.
And it wasn't like a discussion that you'd had with your boyfriend prior about any kind of non-monogamy or any kind of, you were
no way.
Okay.
I was in my early 20s in the Midwest. There was no non-monogamy going on. Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I forgot the setting. It's actually so true. Being like, no.
I was like, I was an old maid, you know, I wasn't married at 25 or whatever. That's not, I'm selling Minnesota short, but not by a lot.
It's, that's really funny. I've actually discussed this quite a lot recently about, what, we're all, or not all of us, but so many of us are brought up to think that a relationship is, and what sex is and what a sexual relationship is. And actually, when you realize that there are no real set rules, how much it opens up your brain. And it's almost quite frightening. It's quite scary.
We made up all the rules.
Yeah.
And that, like, we measure, and we made up all the measures of success. Like, we see a measure of success of a relationship as time-based. Mm. That is the single most powerful measure of success in a relationship is how long have you been together, which is crazy.
Because
maybe not crazy, but it's unnecessary.
It is, because, like, I think when the worst heartbreak of my life, the worst thing, which was the why do you think you've got no friends moment, that situationship, thank you, Katie Green, for the term situationship, I'll always say that, it had been going on for 6 months. And a lot of the time people go, oh, but it was only 6 months, come on. And I was like, my breakdown of relationship after 4 years was way easier to handle than the six months. And that's like,
time should not be the singular measure either of success or of, like, intensity of badness, you know, either of goodness or of badness. Something can get very bad very quickly. Something can be very good very quickly. Yeah. Something can be very good for a very short period of time. Yeah. I think we really, really, really assign time as, like, as a singular measure. And so then that means that whatever decision you make when you're young and stupid is, like, the deciding factor. I have wondered whether I'm just going to be a person. So I don't want kids. I'm not trying to get married. I'm not opposed to marriage. I love the idea of, you know, loving somebody so much that I want to talk about it in front of all my friends. But, I am, like, if I don't get married, my life will be fine.
Yeah.
And so I have actually wondered whether I'm just going to be a person who's, like, in a lot of 2 to 3 year relationships over and over and over. And that, like, is that fine? That might be fine.
It might be fine. There's literally no one saying that's not fine. It's like, because if actually, it's fine for you.
If it's fine for me, right. Although now, man, I do have people saying that's not fine. I know that people will be like, well, who's going to take care of you when you're old? And I'm like, I am going to drive my car off a cliff. You think I'm going to fucking, I'm not going to make somebody put an IV drip in my arm. Anyway. I hope I never.
There's such fun as being going that there's literally there is no one saying that's not fine. There are millions of people who say
that's not fine.
Most people would go, you fucking lunatic. Absolutely not.
Most people are saying you're going to be lonely, you're going to be sad. And I'm already lonely and sad. No, I don't know. I mean, to me,
what's
it's just
new?
Like, yeah, well, yeah, call me. Sure, whatever.
Oh my god, the more and more I've grown up and experienced relationships, the more I've realized that there is no one right way to do it. And as long as someone is sort of, I said maybe 19 months ago, a little bit before that, going, I think I'm just the kind of person who just, like, needs to be free and open and my partner, I can love him so much, but he can go and have sex with everybody and I'll be fine about it. I know that I was talking from a place of utter bullshit there, because I was just desperately trying to convince myself that it was okay and I was happy with that situation. Right. I wasn't. So, but I think anybody who's actually speaking from a place of going, like a bit of like calm and understanding and knowledge of what that means and like and what that's going to entail. I'm like, yeah, you fucking go for it. Like, do you? It's there's for some people the idea of the so for some people the idea of settling down in West London with two kids and a car and a half is like is the hell. For some people, the idea of going to Torture Garden on a Saturday night is hell.
And so, and some people just want in secret.
And those people are exhausted. I can tell you.
Yep.
One thing I do want to ask you about, I guess, is like your ideas about open relationships and things like that. Because I've had people on the podcast before, like, do you know Jack Barry, comedian? Talks about the fact that he's been in a relationship with his girlfriend for years. And for the first like couple of years, they weren't monogamous. And then after that, they opened up the relationship and like in different ways. I think they brought people in and then they started sort of seeing each other, seeing other people and sleeping with other people. How, in your head, how would that, would you be able to do that? Or do you think when you're with someone, that's it for the two,
yes,
3 years
so-
or whatever?
This is what a can of worms, huh? Open relationships
open it
are
up.
For everyone. Yeah. So I think I've always known that I would be very jealous if somebody were sleeping with somebody else.
Mm.
And I'm right. I think a lot of women are like, well, I'm sure a lot of people, but I know a lot of female friends who are like, well, yeah, my perfect setup is I get to sleep with whoever I want and he does not. And I'm not saying that as a realistic pitch, but like, I just know that a lot of women feel like that, where we're all like, oh yeah, I'm fine. I want to be able to kiss somebody. Don't, but don't get away from her. Get scram. and I am no different. I feel like that too. So what I don't know, so I've never earnestly entered an open relationship. I've never like in good faith entered a relationship where somebody with somebody where we're like, this is the, you know, these are the ground rules. We're going to talk through it. We're going to talk about our feelings, whatever. And so what I don't know is, I know I would feel jealous. Absolutely. I would feel cripplingly jealous. Mm. But is that a feeling that I could get used to or work through? Or, and I don't mean get used to like, it's a bad feeling and now I just have to put up with it feeling bad. But like, it's like, if I'm interested in somebody else and he's interested in somebody else, could we all, but we're clearly still primary. I think it would have to be a person who I felt so satisfied by in many, many ways. So that, but it's like, I don't know. I watch a lot of patterns of open relationships. Only relationships that I have ever seen actually be successful long term, every single one of them invariably winds up as monogamy by the end, even when they're like, no, we're still open, we're still officially open, we just don't have time to fuck anybody else. It's like, yeah, no, okay, but then you're just functionally monogamous. every open relationship that I see lasting ends in monogamy.
Yeah.
Every relationship that I see starting as monogamy and then opening, and I don't mean this to I hope for Jack's sake that it works out great, but I see constantly that like eventually one of the people fully falls in love with somebody else. Mm. And then that becomes untenable for the initial relationship. Mm. And also like, to me, I think especially because I'm doing this solo show about how I've cheated a bunch, everybody wants me to have an answer of, yeah, like, this is my perfect solution and I know exactly what I would want. And literally all I would want is to be able to talk about it with somebody.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a perfect solution. I don't know what would work for me. I would bet that what would work for me with one person is probably not what would work for me with somebody else.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like all I can do is sort of muddle through, deal with situations as they arise. And fortunately, that means that like what I am suggesting is a lot more work than just not, it's a lot more, it's a lot more external work than just monogamy, where we're all like, okay, we know the rules. You know, we don't have to check in about this again.
Where monogamy becomes
work is that it's internal work. And not just internal work in terms of like, you know, temptation and holding off, but it's internal work because I think a lot of people do chafe against the bounds in the same way that I have. And what the work winds up being usually is repression. It usually is like, turn it off, lock it down. That's not what we want. And I don't know, like, maybe there's an argument to be said that like, there's nothing perfect. And so it's okay to repress. Maybe there's an argument to be said that, you know, monogamy is a, you know, distinctly modern organization that we, you know, aren't really, that we didn't evolve to have those, you know, signals in our brain. Who knows? The problem is that like it, I know that it means that my life, my romantic life will inherently be complicated, or that I'll be asking somebody to engage in complication with me. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's convenient for me to not want kids and not care if I get married. Like the stakes are lower for me in that case.
Yeah. Because if that was added in, there would just be an extra layer of something to handle and something to deal with and other people to bring into a situation. And actually when it's on terms of you being like, I don't want those things. So it can just be a solo experience really. Or a solo, yes, like, journey, because you're not having to factor in, you know, offspring and
yeah,
and whatever's going to be handed out to them. It is more convenient to have that attitude.
And there's no, like, I don't have to use a ticking clock. I don't have a to figure out this model in the next 5 or 8 years or whatever.
Mm.
I'm sort of like, whatever. If I don't figure it out, I don't figure it out.
As we're having this discussion, my boyfriend just walked past the door, so that was good.
That's great.
He can't listen. He can't actually hear what's going on. So we're fine. I think it is funny when you sort of have when you talk about something with passion and with a certain amount of like confidence, even though it's coming from your own experience and your own opinion, people do often, like you said, expect you to have the exact answer, or expect you to be like the one to lead the way and be like the guru and the Jedi of this kind of thing.
I also just don't think there is an answer to, well, I don't know, not for me. I don't think there's an answer for me to a relationship structure that just makes me feel forever like, okay, great, no more work needs to be done. I'm good. I'm locked in. And maybe there's just going to be a person who I'm going to run into who I go, holy shit, I will never desire another human again. Or like, not I will never desire another human again, but like, I will, whatever I feel for another person will never come close to, you know, distracting me, really.
Yeah.
But haven't met that person yet. But like, even if I could tell you, my perfect system is start with like mostly monogamy, but I'm allowed to kiss a stranger at a bar and we just have to talk about it. If I could give you that recipe, it's like, yeah, but in 2 months, that recipe is going to have to change. That is going to, we have mixed all of the ingredients and now the bread is a little burnt. So we have to, you know.
I feel like we're constantly adapting and changing and, designing, if we have the, I always say if we have the luxury to be able to design our own lives and our own kind of experience, and that is really incredible, and absolutely go for it. And I think I've very much been someone who in the past has been like, this is it, and this is the way that it happens, and this is what works for me. And then I have met someone else and been like, oh no, this is it, and this is what works for me. And actually what I've realized is that all my relationships in the past, I was going off of what they were showing me of what they wanted, because I'm so like horrendously codependent that I was like, oh yeah, and like this works, this is perfect, oh my god, I found the answer, this is beautiful. And actually it's why I like, after this last relationship, I was single for so long, because so I was like, I can't get back into another thing where I'm just going, like following their lead and being and saying, yes, this absolutely works for me. And actually starting a new relationship and doing it in a way of going, of just making things a discussion and actually not just depending on the other person's opinions and ideas and want for their relationship has been really, really great. Because you're suddenly like, oh my God, if I put a little bit of salt in this sourdough, this is crazy. I never thought about doing that before. And it's brilliant. But yeah, I was like, for so long definitely just going off of other people's ideas of what a happy relationship was and how to create that.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And what's crazy is that those people are also going off of other people's ideas of what is a happy relationship.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, they were making it up too. They probably weren't doing the kind of self-interrogation that they needed to do. All of us are just a little fucked up, which is why I actually love being in my 30s. I have always dated older. I've always dated like anywhere from 4 to 10 years older than me. And, I love now dating men in their late 30s and early 40s. I've discovered that like over the last year-ish, it's like, oh, I'm not the biggest deal. Which is great. I love like it's like if you've been divorced, I'm a fucking like a month long dating thing. Like doesn't matter, you know? And I don't mean that to say like, I don't want to matter. I just mean like, I love being older, having the stakes feel lower, feeling more experienced, feeling more prepared. Like I have loved every year that I get older, I'm like, oh, I'm so much smarter. I have loved getting older. I've loved being in my 30s. I've loved dating in my 30s.
Yeah.
I really have. The lesson for anybody in their 20s listening to this is, don't worry, you're fine. You're going to be fine.
Literally, exactly that. Don't worry, you're going to be fine. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And if you feel like you're fucking up, it's okay. It's okay. We'll work this out. You will be fine. I love that thing about just kind of realizing that you're not the biggest deal for everybody. Because
I love it.
Because it's kind of a relief. It's kind of a relief that you suddenly go,
it's liberating.
I'm not actually going to like alter the course of the future for this person. It's all right. It's all right.
Or like, if I do, it will happen because like we have genuine feelings, not because this person doesn't have any other context. And not because I don't have any other context, you know. It's nice to have years and years.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. It's so funny. Like going the past relationships, these past people that I always just assumed were like, I was like running into the fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi of relationships. I was like, you know everything and you must teach me everything. And obviously they had no fucking idea. And so it was just kind of running around like a headless chicken, just like trying to grab for what I thought a good relationship was. And it was, and like the knowledge was going, you can just chill out And like that release was amazing, of going like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And being able to like, and knowing it's okay to like argue with a partner, knowing it's okay to still fuck up and be able to apologize for it or whatever, and just kind of work your way through it, rather than there being so much pressure on the like minutiae fucking everything within a relationship, just kind of like letting it breeze. Tell you what, guys, anyone in your 20s, being in your 30s is flipping brilliant. I hated my 20s. I was an absolute nutcase.
Yes, I at the time I was like, I'm amazing, and I didn't hate my 20s, but I do look back and go, how did I make a single decision ever? Like, how I was so stupid. I was so blind. What was I doing?
I said this actually to a friend the other day who'd broken up with someone who was younger than me. I was like, they are 21. That like they're gonna be the worst right now. It's all right. It's all right. And they went, oh no, actually they're 23. And I was like, trust me, I was worse at 23.
Yes.
And obviously that's not...
I dated a man briefly who was 27. I described him as, I was like, he was just very young. And somebody asked how old he was. And I said 27. And they were like, 27's like, you know, he's an adult. He like, that's an age that people get married and have kids and whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, it just feels like such a baby.
Yeah.
When I was 27, I didn't know anything.
I mean, I still don't really, but like, I know a little bit more. But, and this is obviously, there are some people in their 20s who have really got their shit together. Like I look at some of the Gen Zers and what they're up to, and I'm like, holy cow, you're smashing it.
Oh, Greta Thunberg has bad habits in relationships. I bet Greta Thunberg is a bad girlfriend some days.
Is she currently in a relationship? Do we know?
I have no idea, but she is younger than me, and that makes her threatening.
Actually, and Felipe, producer Felipe just sent a message going, like me, because Felipe is currently 25. I don't know if he's going to respond to that. Felipe, 26. 26. Do you know what? Felipe does have a lot of his shit together. So, you know, it is not a one-size-fits-all phenomenon. But definitely when I was in my 20s, I was an absolute fucking fruitcake, and sort of into my 30s as well. So anyone listening who is panicking, you're absolutely fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, your 40s are going to be great.
It's all about the 40s. It's fine.
50s are the new 20s.
So how are you enjoying your time in Edinburgh at the moment?
Lovely. It's so beautiful. The festival is insane and overwhelming and swamping and also a high, and it's really, I mean, it's intoxicating. Like, I understand why people say this is the best month of the year and do Fringe every single year, because it's addictive.
And you're based in New York, aren't you?
Based in New York.
It's
harder to come over, you know. It would be lovely to come up for a couple.
Is this your first time at the Fringe? Have you done the Fringe before?
I've never done the Fringe before. This is my first time in Scotland entirely. I've done comedy in London before, but never in Scotland.
That is, I mean, you can't tell from my accent, but that is the land of my people. That is my motherland, technically.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm Scottish. My whole family is Scottish, It is beautiful. It is very, very beautiful. I've actually never been to the Fringe, and really want to go and need to go, because it just looks incredible. I think I'm trying to make it up next year. And your show, what's your show called, and what is it about in general?
My show is called Cheat, and it's about how I've cheated in a lot of my relationships.
I love that you talk about this, because I've done it. I've cheated. I'm sorry. I'm sure that everyone, if you're listening to this, you already know that. And the amount of guilt and shame that I've held over that, and the amount of like how much I've beaten myself up for doing that. And yeah, it was bad, but I was also just like confused and sad and like didn't really understand. And also a lot of people do it, and it doesn't make you a terrible person.
Oh. so many people do it and no one talks about it. So yeah. that's my pitch. I think we should talk about it. Yeah. I think that it is healthy to talk. We all have vulnerable and shameful shit. We all have wounds. And I think it is so much healthier to talk about that and to be honest with yourself and the people around you.
Yeah. The more that you harbor this stuff, and this is one reason why, like with this podcast, and they talk about, you know, all the things that have happened, and people quite close to me are like, are you not like embarrassed talking about this stuff? Do you not feel ashamed? I'm like, no, because if I kept this stuff inside, if I didn't give it some airtime, it would just fester and grow and like mutate. And actually just giving it freedom and space is so helpful mm-hmm. and so cathartic, because you go, it's okay, just let it out into the ether. Because the mm-hmm. more that we do this and you think that you're sort of alone in this behavior, you think you're alone in these bad decisions, and then you're sort of sat, I can't remember who was I talking about this with. There was someone, we were talking about how, you know, you're sat in your tent alone, feeling so horrible and ashamed and like this kind of social pariah and no one wants you. And then you open up your tent and there's all these other people who are also in the same situation. Actually, if you got out, you'd have a huge party and discuss all your trauma and your weird
yeah.
things that you've done. But staying inside your tent, you just get colder and colder and smaller and just feel worse about yourself. So I think that's fucking fantastic. I don't know, that's brilliant. Love
well, thank you. Anybody, the show is 7:15 every night at the Pleasance Courtyard through nice. August 28th.
Beautiful. So we've talked quite a lot about different parts, especially to do with relationships. What are the things about you as a person that you really admire about yourself, that you really love about yourself? What are the parts of you that you think are great?
I trust my brain above mm-hmm. anybody else's brain. And like, maybe that's arrogant or whatever. I'm not saying I'm smarter than everybody else, but I'm saying like, I trust my own decision-making in situations mm-hmm. So firmly. What's funny is that the place that I don't trust my own decision making is in romantic relationships. That's where I spin and spin and spin. That's where I can talk myself out.
Yeah.
But other than romantic relationships, I trust my read on, I trust my analysis of situations. I trust my instinct of like how to handle a problem. Mm-hmm. I trust my own analysis. Which is, I mean, I didn't plan it and I'm grateful for it.
I think that's a really great one to bring up. And it's a real gift, because so many of us, especially if you're quite codependent, or if you, you know, have grown up feeling very small, very, where your opinion doesn't matter, that like a lot of us will always assume that someone else's opinion is greater than ours. Someone else is more right than we are. And it becomes really exhausting and really difficult when you're constantly second guessing yourself, in sort of whatever capacity, and of going, even if like, I don't know, if a friend is upset with you, a friend says that you've hurt them, or and it didn't happen in the way that you thought it did, you'll, like, most of us will go, oh no, they must be right because their opinion is greater than ours, because I'm not right, I'm never right. Someone else is always smarter, someone else is always more in tune with their emotions, is more self-aware, blah, blah, blah. And so I think it's a really cool thing to be able to go, no, I really trust my brain.
I think I'm right.
Yeah. I think it's fucking great. Honestly, because like, I never, ever think I'm right. Ever. I always assume I'm wrong. And it's exhausting, because I'm not, like, sometimes, most of the time, I'm not.
Probably right. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
But it's yeah. just, it's almost like, it's less hassle to be wrong. It's less hassle to be wrong.
Totally less hassle. And maybe the thing that I'm actually describing that I like about myself is not actually the brain analysis itself, because you're right. Like exactly what you were saying, 9 times out of 10, you probably have the right read on a situation. You probably have the right analysis of a problem solving. You probably have the right instinct. And so maybe the thing that I actually like is the bridge between the bridge that crosses the gap of then I, that analysis, like yeah. my first answer is that analysis is correct. And if your first answer or somebody's first answer is that analysis is incorrect, then you have to do the work of going, no, it's fine. It's fine. Which is so funny, because it's exactly what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast of that, like the back of your brain is like, hey kid, come on, we got to get in the car. We're going to be late. You have to put your shoes on. I know. We can put your hat under the car. Come on. And the front of your brain is like, no, I don't want to go. I'm staying here.
So good. No, I don't want to put my coat on. I don't want to. It's snowing outside. I don't care. I'm going to be hot. It is literally exactly. It is exactly like that. And often it's, it's making those decisions. It's making the ones, it's like the things that make you just a bit uncomfortable, like bringing a coat with you because it might get cold later, even though it's a bit annoying to carry around. It's actually a very good decision, but it is a bit annoying and not really what you want to do, but you will be more comfortable later on.
Mm-hmm. And it requires you like thinking through, like run the scenario of what's going to happen in the future when you're cold.
You're
mad at yourself, and then you're in a bad mood, and then you start to freak out, and then other dominoes start to tip because you didn't bring a coat.
Like play it forward. And it is difficult, because if you're warm, you can't say to someone, well, just imagine being cold. It's like, I can't do that. I can't imagine being cold. And so this shit about me bringing a coat just seems so fucking stupid. Right now I'm warm and lovely and I don't want to change that by throwing another thing in there. So why should I bring a coat? And then if you have the ability to play it forward and not rely on the instant gratification and where you actually are at the moment and be able to see the consequences of your actions and, you know, what might fall out, then it's like you've got a better grip on shit, but it's difficult to do. I don't think we talk about that enough, but that's a really great, I really like that one. That's a really nice one. That's one of my favorites ever. And at this point, we have a portion of the podcast that we call Thank You Letters, where we like to ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of all three for which you are grateful and would like to say thank you to.
I am, this is so cheesy, but I am so grateful for my mom. My mom is, she's a single mom. I'm an only child. So we're very, very close.
Nice.
And she just is my singular support network. Yesterday I was having like sort of a career panic spiral and called her from Scotland. It's 7 a.m. where she is back in Minnesota. And like we, you know, just talked for an hour and a half and she did the things that she can be the out loud voice of the back of our brain of the like, come on, kid, get in the car. Come on. Yeah. Time to go.
You're and, not my mom. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she's like, no, I am.
I am your mom.
You have to listen to me. She is really, really good about reminding me that even when some situation is feeling threatening or bad or intimidating or nerve-wracking or like I failed, like after a big situation where I feel like I failed, one of her consistent messages is just like, it has to be joyful. So much about, you know, experiences have to be joyful as much as they can be. And that so much of how we rob ourselves, this sounds really cheesy, but how we rob ourselves of joy is by like is by rummaging around for what's going to happen in the future and finding something, you know, allowing our anxiety to be worried about whatever is going to happen in the future. And that if the more you can just be joyful in whatever you're doing in the moment and not think about what are the implications, be not, you know, not be attached to whatever the outcome is. Not only are you probably going to be more successful in whatever the endeavor is, also it's just like, what's your other option? Both be nervous in the moment and then probably be so crippling in the moment that it's not going to work out in the future. Like, you know, then everything's bad. And so she just has talked me through a bunch of, oh fuck, oh shit, oh fuck, oh shit moments. Becky Radcliffe is a savior of my being. She's very good.
And she's in Minnesota now.
She's in Minnesota. Yeah.
Do you know how much I want to go to Minnesota?
She might be in a cabin in the woods in Minnesota right now. I would guess that she is in a different cabin. Minnesota, Becky. Northern Minnesota has only cabins.
Becky, yeah. What are you doing in a cabin?
Yeah, I think Minnesota is one of the most incredible states in the US.
I can't wait. I'm desperate to go because I want to drive across America, but I want to go to the states that you maybe wouldn't go to. Like, you aren't like the ones that people go, I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to California and maybe one of these ones down here. I want to be like, what the fuck is Utah about? Like, I want to know.
Utah is incredible. Utah is so beautiful. Go to Utah. Go to Minnesota. Absolutely.
Yeah. And your show, you said before, but you're running until the 28th of August. I will link everything below so people can come find tickets. But it sounds really amazing. And if I was in Edinburgh, I would be there straight away because it is the kind of subject matter that I'm kind of obsessed with because I think so much.
I have women leave this show and be like, that's everything that's in my head and I just can't say it out loud. And I'm like, I know, right? And so, yeah. That's my hope. That's what I want to do with the show. That's my
Exactly. Because I think the sun, especially as women, we harbor so much shame over this stuff and sex and relationships. And I was saying this to my boyfriend yesterday that like when I was at school, there was a boys' school a little way away. And if a girl from my school got with one of the boys from that year group, fine. If they got with two, that was shady. If they got with more than two, holy fuck, they were like, what a slut, wanton whore. And then, but if the boys did it, if the boys could just go like rattle through us like fucking bingo machine, like it was, and it was fine. And I just feel, and I know, and that's a really small example of sort of what it's like being a woman.
It's so foundational.
Yeah.
And the reason that is the, like, if anything, the experience that you just described is like common. And that's a thing that we talk that, you know, that that's a measure that we're familiar with. And so if anybody was like, I've heard the double standard, but it's like, yeah, the reason that we talk about the double standard all the time is because it is all around us and every single one of us has experienced it and dealt with it.
Yeah.
That's why we keep talking about it.
Yeah. We talk about it. We're not like bringing something up out the ground and digging deep. No, it's fucking everywhere. I could take it off the shelf right next to me. It's here. It's everywhere. And so it's such a relief. Like, that's like hearing someone just like speak so openly about it and just like, and rid the shame and rid the guilt. No, I think it's really brilliant. So I will link everything below, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We are Paul Close up in, I say Paul Close, having an amazing time up in Scotland. but we had to do over my Zoom. And when producer Felipe is not in the room with me, my technological skills go out the window. So I do appreciate your patience and generosity surrounding that.
Oh yeah.
But thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
I loved it.
This was awesome. Thank you. Bye.
Ever
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.